This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. It's a basic law of leadership. No one succeeds without help. Entrepreneurs have collaborators, heads of state have allies and constituents, athletes have coaches. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played for the Bucks and the Lakers, racking up the most career points of any NBA player. His work and his life have earned him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. But as he tells it, he cannot help thinking throughout his life of the man behind the legend, the college basketball coach who is a legend in his own right, John Wooden of UCLA, the teacher and guide with whom he shared a 50-year friendship. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's new book about this friendship is called Coach Wooden and Me, and he joins us now from NPR in New York. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. How are you? How is life these days?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. Excellent. It's a great book. It seems like you've stayed very, very busy, but I'm curious how this book came about with everything else that you're up to.
Well, you know, Coach Wooden had such an influence on my life. It really meant a lot to me, and it was in a lot of ways pretty profound. So I had to think about it, and in thinking about it, I decided that maybe I should share what my experience was because Coach Wooden was that meaningful.
Talk about Coach Wooden. I mean, beyond what we'll discuss from the book and the details of his life and his work and all his records, you know, if you were sitting next to somebody on an airplane and they asked you, oh, yeah, I heard John Wooden. I heard about him. He's this great coach, but who was he? What would you say to them just off the top of your head as to who he was to you?
Well, in addition to being a great coach, Mr. Wooden really enabled me to get an understanding of what's important in life, you know, with regard to the people that you have to work with and live with, your family. He really enabled me to understand that through the medium of basketball. He used basketball as an analogy to teach us about life, and it really worked.
Talk about who you were before you went to UCLA and met John Wooden. You know, you grew up in New York. You were taller than 7 feet by high school, which made you certainly noticeable, a bit of an outlier in basketball circles, at least then. If we had met you before you had met John Wooden, what kind of a kid would we have seen?
Well, you would have seen a shy kid who was probably a dreamer. You know, I had dreams of being a great athlete, and I wanted to play basketball professionally. And I thought that if I went to UCLA, I would have a good chance because I liked the way Coach Wooden's teams played.
What was it about John Wooden that attracted you to UCLA? You and allowed your parents to feel comfortable sending you across country to Los Angeles.
Well, for me, I always wanted to be a professional basketball player, and I was told that I probably was too skinny to make it. I had to be a big bruising guy like Wilt Chamberlain. And Coach Wooden's first NCAA championship team had nobody on the starting team taller than 6'6". And they won with the speed and agility and defensive pressure. And I thought that was a good way to play the game. And given my gifts, I thought that I should be playing for John Wooden.
When did you know that you were actually good at basketball, good enough to maybe be great? Did you always know, or was there a moment or a person who kind of turned you onto the possibility of basketball as a career?
I think I became aware that I could do well at basketball my sophomore year in high school. I was a consensus All-America that year, and no one could guard me at that point. And I realized that, maybe I might go a good distance in professional basketball, and I had hopes to that end.
You talk a bit in the book about what John Wooden began to impart to you and the other players early on in your time at UCLA. And I read the book, I love it, and I think one of the things I love about the book is not only that your deep love for John Wooden and your just gratitude and appreciation comes out, but also these little nuggets of kind of folksy Midwestern wisdom that make him so endearing. Like the thing about the shoes and the socks on the first day of practice. Could you relate that?
Well, you know, if you're going to play college basketball, you want to be able to compete. And in order to compete, you have to get on the court. Well, if you have blisters on your feet and you can't run, then you can't play. And if you can't play, you can't be the best basketball player that you can be. So Coach Wooden didn't want you putting on your socks the wrong way, which would cause a blister. He didn't want that to start a chain of events that would eliminate you from being able to compete and to practice. So you had to start out on day one knowing how to tie your shoes up so that you don't get blisters, so that you're able to make every practice and develop your basketball talents to the highest degree possible.
So you get to UCLA, you're with the other players, you're a freshman on the team, and John Wooden says, lesson one, tying your shoes. And you thought to yourself, what?
Well, I never got that speech.
Oh.
No, I didn't. It's odd. Coach Wooden did that a lot, but mainly at his basketball camps.
Gotcha.
When he was dealing with the guys that played for him at UCLA, I guess they were supposed to know that by heart anyway.
He's very different in a lot of ways than what we see mythologized in terms of what a great collegiate coach is, or just a great coach in general. I wonder how much of the book was about breaking up some of the mythology around coaching of these huge, larger-than-life figures, when he was really very simple and had a very plain-spoken way of doing things. How much of the book was about speaking to the mythology around John Wooden?
Well, I think that you can misunderstand someone when you don't, like, know them up close and personal. So I think that people hear about Coach Wooden's success and they build a picture of him that might not be very realistic. So you have to, like, actually know about his life and know what he was about and who he was actually to understand him.
Well, we'll get a chance to learn more about who John Wooden was actually from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, NBA legend and the author of Coach Wooden and Me. We welcome your questions for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar as well. Give us a call, 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. Email us, 1A@WAMU.org. Comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at 1A. Talk about college basketball at the time that you went to UCLA. What was its status at the time that you went there? Was it the big sport that we know it now, with March Madness and so forth, or was it still kind of an up-and-coming sport?
I'd have to say that college basketball was up-and-coming at the time that I played, and I think the games that we played against the University of Houston in my sophomore and junior year really helped to engender March Madness. I think after the 1968 season, the interest in college basketball more or less took off. The game that we played against Houston in the Astrodome, which UCLA lost, really was viewed by a lot of people across the nation. It was the first time a college basketball game had been broadcast in prime time, and it did very well.
There are a few clips of Coach Wooden that we'd like to play through the hour. Here is one of them. This is a clip from where UCLA won the NCAA championship in 1968. Here, you'll hear some of the announcer and then Coach Wooden's words from the TV broadcast after UCLA won the title in 68. Listen.
The 78-55 UCLA win is the most one-sided victory in NCAA title game history. And Coach Wooden reflects on this great championship team.
This is truly a great basketball team. I've been reluctant to say so earlier in the year, but I believe at our best we're the finest basketball team that has ever played college basketball. Now having won our second championship in a row and our fourth in the last 5 years, of course, gives me a tremendous amount of pleasure and pride and satisfaction in these young men.
That's Coach John Wooden speaking after UCLA won the NCAA title in 1968. At what point did it become clear to you that your team was really a powerhouse, that this John Wooden guy wasn't just a great coach for you, but that he was great and your team was great in its own right? When did that click for you?
Well, for me, that clicked sometime during my sophomore year. You know, we went through that year undefeated and won the NCAA tournament. And I thought, geez, we might be able to do this again.
We've got some great comments from listeners, from a lot of fans as well. Julianne in North Carolina emailed us, "Where did you learn to think so clearly and write so beautifully? You are a treasure and your basketball skills are secondary." I tend to think that Coach Wooden would have kind of liked that. I know we're up against a break in a moment, but it sounds like that's the balance that he would have liked, for people to remember you as you and then your basketball skills secondarily.
I think so. I think he would have found that to be a pleasant problem to deal with. what do you give the most credit to? That's a wonderful problem.
Well, I do want to get more into the other part of Julianne's question. We got to pause for a minute, but I am interested in the balance between John Wooden's tutelage on the court and also his impact on your thoughts and your words and the way that you developed into manhood. We'll continue that on the other side of this pause with Basketball Hall of Famer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. His new book is called Coach Wooden and Me. We welcome your questions for him. Call us 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. Email 1A at WAMU.org. Tweet us at 1A or comment on our Facebook page. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're continuing our conversation with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and his new book is called Coach Wooden and Me, Our 50-Year Friendship on and Off the Court. We welcome your questions and thoughts for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Call us 855-236-1A1A. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A at WAMU.org. Julianne in North Carolina emailed us, "Where did you learn to think so clearly and to write so beautifully? How much did John Wooden aspect, how much did John Wooden affect that aspect of your life, your thought process, your writing? Is that something he influenced directly, or more, was it more indirectly?"
I would have to say that Coach Wooden's influence on my writing was indirect. He wanted all of his players to do well in school, and I managed to do well in my classes and get good grades. But Coach Wooden didn't follow it that closely. You know, he would hear that I was getting good grades, and he was pleased with that. He didn't get into too many specifics. But if you're around him casually, you know, like when we were traveling or around practice times or training table times, he would talk about different aspects of literature that he was into. He was a real fan of poetry. He would quote some of his favorite poets like Shakespeare or Elizabeth Barrett Browning, and he was really into that, and you know, tried to share that with guys who had an affinity for those types of things, who like poetry and literature.
Speaking of his love of poetry, here's a clip of John Wooden reading a favorite verse that you said helped him contextualize the real meaning of success. It's written by an anonymous author, but apparently was one of those that stuck with him for his whole life. This is from a recorded interview for a nonprofit community service program called Orco Development that he gave back in 1999. Here's John Wooden reading that verse.
"At God's footstool to confess, a poor soul knelt and bowed his head. I failed, he cried. The master said, thou didst thy best. That is success." So from those things, I coined my own definition, which is success is peace of mind attained. Success is peace of mind, which is a direct result of gaining the personal self-satisfaction of knowing that you did the best to become the best of which you're capable.
That's John Wooden speaking back in 1999. It seems like a lot of John Wooden's wisdom was very bite-sized, very easy to remember. And I imagine, Kareem, that that was on purpose. He was dealing with young men who probably had a lot that was just flying at them because you're in college and you're an athlete and everything's going on. And he had to relate it to you in a way that it might stick.
Yeah, he would do that, but he also would pay attention to how we competed, and what our focus was all about. He got a lot of insight into people's personalities by watching how they played the game and how well they took coaching.
We've got a lot of emails from people who basically grew up with you and saw you as you progressed along the way. Dillard in Charlotte, North Carolina emailed, "I remember Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in college and pro very well, along with Pete Maravich. I was lucky to have gone to a basketball camp at Campbell College in North Carolina, where John Wooden was the coach, and it was great." And Dillard also adds that, like you, he is a fellow jazz lover. What was it about the two of you that began to come together? I mean, here you were, this 7-foot-tall kid from New York. He was this little Midwestern folksy guy. Talk about what it was that began to make you really feel as a player that this coach was pushing you toward success. When did the bridge between your two very different worlds begin to get noticeably built?
Well, I think... I got closer to Coach Wooden as I went through the last 2 years of my college career, and the pressure on us increased. You know, when Coach Wooden first won the NCAA tournament in 1964 and 1965, UCLA was an underdog. They weren't expected to win anything, and it was pretty special how that all came together. But after I got on the team and we won that first year, people expected us to win, and it really took a lot of the sense of discovery and excitement out of our competition. No longer were we, was there any question, we were supposed to win, and we weren't playing really to win, we were playing not to lose, and, you know, blow up people's expectations. And that really took a lot of fun out of it for Coach Wooden. All of a sudden, it became a lot more challenging just to deal with all these other issues that weren't part of his initial success.
You know, it's interesting. One of the aspects of John Wooden's story that most resonated with me that actually came up, you know, in the transition between 1A and our predecessor, the Diane Rehm Show, when people asked, you know, how you handle following a legend, I recalled that John Wooden, for all of his records, only had one losing season, and it was his very, very first season as a coach. And if we had judged John Wooden by his first season rather than by his last season, we'd have a very different picture of John Wooden today. And this focus on being able to play each game and not get hung up on defeat or victory was crucial. Talk about what it was like as a player in the middle of that, as John Wooden was just trying to keep you guys focused on playing each game one at a time. How did he do that?
Well, what Coach Wooden would do would have his focus on the fundamentals, executing the fundamentals. Each of us had to learn how to play with the other guys and execute fundamentals offensively and defensively as a team, not as individuals. He wanted us to think as a team, as a unit. So that really enabled us to develop the type of coordination and teamwork that wins championships.
What did you do?
Coach never told us that we had to win. He just wanted us to play up to the way that he had taught us, and he said that if we did it that way, we would be satisfied with the results, which was a victory, of course. But he never ever put the emphasis on the victory. It was on the process of getting there, of doing a job a certain way, which would guarantee success.
Talk about when your signature move, the sky hook, began to come about. You talk about kind of finding your way through the sky hook in this book. What was that like for you as a player, kind of realizing like, oh, I might have a superpower. This is kind of cool. And having John Wooden walk you through developing that. What was that like?
Well, you know, I started working on the hook shot when I was in the fifth grade. Fifth grade through eighth grade, I worked on that shot. And by the time I got into high school, I could make that shot. Coach Wooden had nothing to do with teaching me that shot, but he did show me how to use it effectively once he realized that I could shoot it as well as I did.
A number of our listeners are sharing some of their recollections of you, and we'll get to the phones in just a second, 855-236-1A1A. Barbara emailed, "I first saw Lou Alcindor in my freshman history class at UCLA as he ducked through the door. I did not ever get to know him on a personal level, but he and the UCLA team were great all 4 years. Thanks." Imaginary Incorporated tweets, "My pops played against you in high school. You stuffed him, and he loves that memory." Thanks, Kareem. And Betsy emailed, "As an 18-year-old white girl, I worked at Howard Johnson's on the New Jersey Turnpike. Mr. Jabbar was then Lou Alcindor. It was 1969, and he came to our rest stop. I was thrilled to see him and alerted all the other waitresses. They wondered how I recognized him. I asked how many 7-foot-1 people they knew. I have admired him for close to 50 years. Thank you all for your emails. We'll get some more of them as the hour goes on. Talk about that aspect of race in the 60s. You describe in the book that you were a young man who was beginning to become aware of your role in the civil rights movement and wanting to take a place in that. How did John Wooden influence that? Did he get it? Did he not get it? Was he helpful? Was he a hindrance? How did race factor into your connection to him?
John Wooden absolutely got it. And unbeknownst to most people, John Wooden was involved in the earliest moments of the civil rights movement. When he was coaching in Indiana, his teams did pretty good, and he was invited to the NAIA tournament, National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics. And that was the main tournament back there in the 1940s. So Coach Wooden's team did very well in 1947. He was invited to this tournament. And the guys from the tournament called him. Coach Wooden said, "Yeah, we're interested in coming. You guys run a great tournament." And the people who ran the tournament said, "Yeah, we want you to come, but you have to understand that you can't bring any black ball players. We segregate our tournament." And Coach Wooden said, "Well, you know, our team has played together the whole season. I'm not going to break them up now. We're not coming." And Coach Wooden did not bring his team to the NAIA tournament. The following year, his team did even better. He got the same call from the NAIA tournament, and they had the same conversation. And they told him again that he wouldn't be able to bring a black ball player. And Coach Wooden was prepared to tell him no, he wasn't going to do that. He wasn't going to break up his team just to satisfy their desire to have a segregated tournament. So they finally capitulated and let him bring that player. Coach Wooden had to find accommodations for him because the hotels in Kansas City where they had the tournament were segregated, but Coach Wooden kept the team together. Now, that was definitely a blow struck for the idea of equal treatment. The civil rights movement was just getting off the ground there in 1947 and 48. And Coach Wooden did something like that. And I didn't find out about that until only a couple of years before Coach Wooden passed away. Huh. He never bragged about it. And if I were him, you know, it's something I would have at least shared with people who had some interest in what was going on with civil rights. But Coach Wooden never tried to take credit. He just tried to let you know in subtle ways what was right and wrong. And he hoped that you did the right thing.
Let's head to the phones now, 855-236-1A1A. Tom in Philadelphia. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind?
Oh, Kareem, huge respect to you. A question about Coach Wooden and your relationship. What was it about Coach Wooden that reached into your soul and helped make you what you became? Any coach in the world would have loved having you on their team. What was it about him that drew you out?
Good question, Tom.
Well, for me, you know, playing for Coach Wooden meant that I was going to learn from a master, someone who understood the game and the best way to play it. And I think that that really gave me a solid foundation for my professional career. I was already simpatico with the coach's style of leadership because I had watched the Boston Celtics, Bill Russell's Celtics, play, and that was a team with the cohesion and focus that made basketball understandable to me. So to have that example and then to play for Coach Wooden really gave me the solid fundamentals I needed to do well in the game throughout my professional career.
Let's keep going on the phones with Richard here in Washington. Hi, Richard. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Sure.
Coach Wooden, often when I think about his coaching philosophy, I also sense a spiritual dimension, a spiritual element. And I wonder what influence that may have had on Mr. Jabbar and his own spiritual life, his own conversion to Islam, and whether he and Coach Wooden maintained or continued discussions about this as they went on in life. Thank you.
Good question, Richard.
Yeah, I'd have to say that, you know, my morality and what I understood about right and wrong really was compatible with what Coach Wooden was all about. And that really enabled us to learn about each other and to appreciate what each other had to give to the team and to the game of basketball. It was really neat the way that evolved that way. Coach Wooden was such a patient man, and he genuinely was gratified to see us learning how to treat each other and how to approach the game of basketball in a way that enables us to win and to feel good about ourselves.
You do talk in the book about your spiritual journey through Islam and some of the turns that it took, including a spiritual mentor that you were very close to and then kind of pulled away from to have what I guess you would describe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like he was espousing a very hardline, stricter form of Islam, and you reached a place where your faith maybe felt a little bit more humane to you, a little bit less orthodox, less hardline. First of all, am I describing that journey correctly? And how much did Mr. Wooden's expressions of faith affect that?
Well, I think that when I started to get an idea of what my teacher, my Islamic teacher, was talking about, you know, he tried to keep it sane, but he got into a thing where he wanted to challenge people who didn't see it the way he saw it. And it invited other factions, other Islamic factions, to be in competition with him. And it finally came to violence. And it just was not something that I wanted to be involved in. So, you know, I had to find a better way to practice my faith that didn't involve confrontations like that.
Douglas tweets, if you had not gone to UCLA, where would you have gone? And how do you think that might have impacted your journey?
Well, you know, if I hadn't gone to UCLA, it would have been a different basketball world in the 1960s and 70s, because I don't think UCLA would have done as well. I almost went to St. John's University in Queens, New York. I knew the coach, Joe Lapchick, a great coach, a great man, but he was forced to retire in 1965. He had his 65th birthday, and the university decided that they wanted him to retire. So because I didn't know the new coach, Lou Carnesecca, it kind of like ruined St. John's for me. I also visited the University of Michigan. They had a very good team that year. And I thought about going there, but once I visited UCLA and, you know, talked to Coach Wooden and saw the campus and realized that, you know, I'd be playing in just a great environment, that won me over. And after that, it was all UCLA for me.
Well, I know UCLA was glad to have you, and we are glad to have you for the remainder of this hour. We got to pause for just a moment. We've got some great stories coming in. We'll keep going on the phones and get to more of your questions and thoughts for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. His new book is called Coach Wooden and Me, Our 50-Year Friendship on and Off the Court. We'll keep talking about John Wooden, get into some of Coach Wooden's practical guides, his wisdom for leadership, including his well-known Pyramid of Success. Stay close. Before we get back to our conversation, we would love your help with keeping an eye out for stories to feature on 1A. We know there is life beyond Washington. Thank goodness. And we do our best to look for topics that have nothing to do with politics inside the Beltway or that deal with politics in a new way. But honestly, we know we live in our own bubbles, and we're probably missing things that you know are worth talking about. So, send us your suggestions. What is happening in your area that you think is worth a national discussion? Leave us a voicemail after the show, 855-236-1A1A, and press option 3. What's happening where you live that you think is worth a national discussion? Tell us your story after the show, 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212, and press option 3. You can also record yourself and email the audio to 1A@WAMU.org. Remember, no matter what specific call-outs you might hear for stories on the air, you are always welcome to send us any ideas you have. And we'll get to some more of your stories in the weeks to come here on 1A. Back now to our conversation with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Let's keep going on the phones now with Tim in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, Tim. What's on your mind?
Hi, Joshua. Thank you. Kareem, it is an honor and a privilege to speak with you.
Oh, thank you.
Back in the 60s, my father was the director of the Top of the Poconos basketball camp in the Poconos. And John Wooden at that time would pick one of two camps, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, to visit. And he chose my father's camp. Every morning, my father was to meet with John Wooden. He was there for a week. He was to meet with Mr. Wooden at 7:24 a.m., not before, not after. And then every morning, Coach Wooden would walk over to the jukebox, and he would put a quarter in the jukebox, and he would always play the same song. And my father would say to him, "Why do you always play the same song?" And he said, "Because it reminds me of Nell." And Nell, as Kareem knows, was John Wooden's wife, who he loved dearly. I had the privilege of listening to Coach Wooden deliver his pyramid success myself. I was 11 years old at the time. Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe were the star players at that point. In any event, Kareem, I have a quick question for you, if I may.
Go ahead, Tim.
Sure. Sure.
Thank you. Kareem, I remember seeing a picture of you one time when you were at Power Memorial, and I remember you were holding an instrument. Did you play an instrument in high school?
No, I did not. My dad was a musician. We had a piano in the house, but I wouldn't practice the piano. My dad played trombone. I didn't want to play trombone. I kind of thought I wanted to play saxophone or flute. I fooled around with some of my friends' instruments, but I never got into it. I never learned anything on it. I just fooled around with it.
Tim, I appreciate your story. And Kareem, maybe you can talk a little bit more about that relationship between John Wooden and his loving wife. They were, as you describe in the book, really quite close. And she was kind of a guiding light for him until she passed away before he did.
Yeah, Nell was very much John Wooden's left leg. You know, he had two legs, but he only owned one of them. You know, Nell was really a major force in his life, and she came to every game. They would hold medals that they each of them had the same medal, and they would hold them in their hands. And Coach Wooden would look at her, and before every game, roll up his program, and you know, kind of communicate with her just with a glance, and then we'd play the game. And she was very much a part of who he was. She was his. How do you say it? You know, behind you know what they say: behind every great man is a lovely lady. Well,
right.
She was that lady in his life.
You know, our caller also mentioned the pyramid of success, and I want to make sure that we talk about that before our hour is up. For those of you who are listening, just Google pyramid of success, and you will see it's this 15-block pyramid with faith on the left side and patience on the other side, and these 15 elements that were in John Wooden's view, basically the building blocks of success. And they include values like industriousness, skill, loyalty, poise, enthusiasm, friendship, initiative. The top of the pyramid is competitive greatness. There seems to be, or there is, a lot of business being done with John Wooden's legacy in terms of classes on the pyramid of success and seminars you can take and online courses you can take. What do you make of the way that John Wooden's wisdom has become more commercial and kind of made its way into the halls of business?
Well, I think that's a great thing for his legacy, but he wasn't really into it for that reason. He was into it for its moral value, for what it taught people about how to relate to the people that they care about. That was the important thing about it. It wasn't necessarily about, well, if you know these 15 attributes, you're going to be a winner. Winning for him was being a successful person and being there for the people that counted in your life.
You mentioned that near the end of his life, John Wooden noted that there was one block that he left off the pyramid that he should have included. What was that?
Oh, that was love.
What was behind that?
I think that just the fact that he didn't want to become too emotional with his legacy, but the whole thing was based on love. The love that he had for the people that he taught, you know, those of us who he coached and taught, he loved us. And what he was giving us was something that was a tool that was going to make our lives successful. And that's what it was for him. So the main motivation for that whole pyramid was love. And he couldn't approach it directly when he first put that down, but that was absolutely the most important part of it.
You know, there's a list called the 12 Lessons in Leadership that's also attributed to John Wooden that includes love. Love is the most powerful four-letter word, it says. A few of the other lessons in leadership: make each day your masterpiece, don't look at the scoreboard, seek significant change, the carrot is mightier than a stick, and little things make big things happen. Those are some of John Wooden's lessons in leadership. Let's get to a few more of your emails and calls before we run out of time with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and to discuss his new book, Coach Wooden and Me. Judith, who is a UCLA alumna, emailed, "I was an undergrad from 1966 to 1970. I remember walking into a large lecture hall and I saw a man writing a message along the top of the blackboard behind the lecture stage. While he was writing at the top, he was writing right in front of his chest. Holy cow, I thought, that guy is really tall. It was Kareem. I went to many home games that year and the next. As a dance major, I was blown away by the sheer beauty of the way that team moved. Kareem, Lucius Allen, Lynn Shackelford, Mike Warren, we all loved Coach Wooden." Doc left us a question on our website, the1a.org. How did Mr. Abdul-Jabbar feel about the NCAA creating a rule to limit how much he dominated college basketball? I think Doc's talking about the so-called Lou Alcindor rule, which at the time outlawed slam dunks. How did you feel about that?
Well, I thought it was something that was done to limit my effectiveness. And, you know, I kind of resented it. And thought that, you know, they were trying to limit the way that I could affect the game. But I also realized that even if I couldn't dunk the basketball, I could still play the game pretty well. And I didn't let that that change in the rules affect my ability to play a great game. But, you know, one thing that I found out, and this is something that really got to me, Coach Wooden voted for that rule. He was involved in the coaches and other athletic directors that passed that rule, and he voted for it. Huh. And I never found out about it until like only a couple of years before Coach died. I had no idea that he had voted to go along with that rule, but it didn't matter at that point.
Let's see. Let's broaden it out a little bit beyond some of the questions about your time in college. There's a lot to ask you about before our time is up. John tweeted, "Who was Kareem's most formidable opponent on the court and the NBA?
Geez, I think the guy that did the best defense against me was Nate Thurman. He's a great center, really good defensive player. Nate just passed last year, but he really made me earn my living. But I was able to go out there and compete against him effectively.
We got an email from a mother who did not want to be identified because of how close to home this hits for us. But she wrote, "Are abusive coaches a new development? Why is it happening and how can we get it to stop? My child just finished playing in the atmosphere bordered on emotional domestic abuse." What do you think?
I'm sure that she's very disappointed in that coach. A coach is a surrogate parent. And coaches have to understand that and deal with the people that they're in charge of in a way that gives them some meaningful guidance that they can use for the rest of their life. So abusive coaches are they're just like stage parents. You know, they want the their players to make to look good so that they can look good and they can advance their agenda. They're not really caring about the kids that they're coaching. So, you know, I feel sorry for that mom. She got a raw deal because so many coaches do such a great job of helping kids learn a sport and helping them develop all of the benefits that you get from competitive sports. You know, the ability to be a teammate, conflict resolution, learning how to focus and achieve. There are so many good things that have to do with competitive sports, and to have some coach who's a jerk, you know, abusing the kids like that, it's so unfortunate. And I hope she's able to get her children away from that coach and, you know, get her children with someone who really understands what he's supposed to be doing.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more phone call, maybe two. Let's hear from DB in Ashland, Virginia. DB, what's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Jabbar, man, it's an honor to just talk with you and hear you speak. I went to Stepanek High School, and you came there from Power Memorial way back when you were in 10th grade, and I have the photograph still at home, how it says, respectfully, Lou Alcindor scores his 70th point, and it was the beginning of the third quarter, and there's two Stepanek guards with their hands up with their eyes like, you know, deer in the headlights, and your eyes are at the rim, and you are dunking for your 70th point in the third quarter. And I just wanted to say what an inspiration you've been my whole life. The way you comported yourself with dignity on and off the court, and it was just always a matter of fact. You never, in the age where we live, where people score 20 points and they jump up and down and do all these theatrics, you were just about business, and you comported yourself with dignity. You never put your winning and belittled your opponents. I was always an inspiration, and I went on to become a professional jazz musician, and I know you love jazz and all of that. So I just wanted to thank you, and to speak with you is just an honor. My parents owned a soul food store right in the project area of White Plains at that time, and I was unable to try out for the team, even though I had turned down some scholarships for other schools, but I couldn't because the day before Thanksgiving, my uncle got sick, and I couldn't go to school that day. And when I went back, I told my father, right, say I had a doctor's note, and my father said, no, I don't send you to Catholic school to lie. Hmm. And he wrote the truth, and so I was suspended, and so that was the case. But I wanted to thank you for so many years of enjoyment, and to this day I coach and try to apply life lessons to the people I coach in a way that you have inspired me.
Hey, DB, I appreciate Kareem, that's very high praise.
That was great. And keep up the good work with the coaching because you affect lives in such a positive way. Just make sure that you keep that foremost in your mind because they're counting on you.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad DB brought that up because another one of our listeners, and I know our time is short, but D tweeted us, "What is some advice that Mr. Wooden gave you? Something I can tell my youth AAU team so they can stay focused on the game of basketball." Is there any maybe one nugget of wisdom out of the many, many that you think is just good for any coach, all coaches, to share?
I would say to be patient and keep working on the fundamentals. Basketball is a game of fundamentals. When you've mastered them, you can play the game and have fun. So just take the time to master the fundamentals, and you know basketball will give you the rewards that you're seeking.
Megan tweeted, I have to ask, what was it like to know Bruce Lee? What did you learn from John Wooden that you applied to martial arts?
Well, you know, I'd have to tell her that what I learned from Bruce and from Coach Wooden basically was the same. It's all about preparation. It's all about understanding what you need to know and getting the fundamentals down so that you can go out there and execute the fundamentals under pressure. That's what any discipline is about. And if you can do that, you'll have fun with whatever it is that you're doing.
I know we're almost out of time. I wonder, though, as it relates to you, you talk about how much Coach Wooden meant to you. There are a lot of up-and-coming players, you know, LeBron James and the Stephen Currys of the world, who look up to you in much the way you looked up to him. Do you feel that the mantle's been passed to you? And if so, how are you doing with carrying that mantle?
Well, I try to, you know, share whatever knowledge that I have with anybody that comes to me and asks, you know, to learn something. It's funny. I just recently reconnected with a guy that kind of mentored me. I remembered I was in grade school, and we went to play a game at Madison Square Garden, an all-star game, and we got to meet some of the Knicks. And one of the Knicks that I met was Willie Knowles. And I'm still in touch with Willie. I just saw him last week. He has glaucoma now. He's having problems with his sight. But he's still there. He gave me such encouragement, and it was neat for me to be able to go back and just cheer him up. He's having a tough time, but he's doing well, and he and his wife are very comfortably ensconced in Southern California, and we're still family.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is the author of the new book, Coach Wooden and Me. Kareem, thanks for spending the hour with us.
It was a pleasure. Good luck to you. It was wonderful sharing this time with you.
Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.